The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Mike, it starts one with my coaches, because people ask me all the time about how do you hire coaches, or what's the process, or, you know, I could care less about anybody's X's and O's. I only hire people that I trust and that I know. That's it. So it may not have started that way, and I know if you're a young coach out there and, you know, you're starting a program, you think, yes, you might need an experienced guy on your staff who's been through some stuff, but you better know that person and you better trust that person before you actually hire them. I literally have former players. My brother's been on my staff for a while. Coaches and people that I've seen coach or handle people way before I put them on my staff. So I think, you know, one of those things that you have to kind of live by what you preach, you know, practice what you preach, and you have to demonstrate that. And I think it starts with the coaching staff. And me in particular, yeah, but I better hire guys that are going to be the same way, and they're going to be loyal. They're not necessarily do what I ask them to do, but represent our school, represent, you know, our program the right way, and treat kids fairly.
Coach Eric Flannery has been the St. Edward Eagles head basketball coach since 1996, where he's won over 400 games in his career. Coach Flannery earned a bachelor's degree from Cleveland State University while simultaneously beginning his coaching career at St. Ed's. His basketball teams at St. Edward's have won two state championships in 1998 and 2014. Coach Flannery was named the 2007 Associated Press Ohio Coach of the Year. Along with his basketball success at St. Ed's, Coach Flannery has been involved with USA Basketball since the early 2000s. He helped coach the USA U16 team to a gold medal in the FIBA Americas tournament during the summer of 2013 in Uruguay, and the U17 team to the gold medal in the World Championships in 2014 in Dubai. Coach Flannery has helped more than 15 former players reach the NCAA Division I basketball ranks, and he has coached three NBA draft picks in his career. Coach Flannery was an assistant coach in the 2008 Jordan Brand Classic and was also the head coach of the Victorious West team in the 2010 McDonald's All-American game. Coach Flannery has reached the highest levels of success in the high school game. He has a wealth of knowledge to dish out to coaches, parents, and players. You'll want to make sure you have a notebook handy so you can jot down some of his wisdom as you listen to this episode with St. Edward High School basketball coach Eric Flannery. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here at the St. Edward Basketball Coach's Office with longtime coaching legend here in Cleveland.
Yeah, please.
Eric Flannery, head coach of the St. Edward Eagles. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be on your show. I know it's early with your show, but I am an avid listener. And if anybody's tuning in on this one early, go check out the other ones with you know, I listened to Coach White and Coach Kwasniak and Coach O'Toole. You did a great job with those, and I just hope I can live up to some of that, those expectations and some of the great things that they said.
I appreciate that. It's been those guys made it easy on me.
Yeah.
All three of them are
great
just
guys,
a wealth,
great coaches.
Yeah, wealth of knowledge. And again, if anybody's out there and listening to this one and you haven't caught any of those episodes, certainly you want to go back and listen to those, because the wisdom that those three coaches brought, I'm sure Eric's going to bring the same thing here today. If you're a coach or you're a parent or you're a player, there's going to be a lot of things that you're going to learn from tuning in and listening to the podcast. So we appreciate our audience out there taking a listen. And let's jump right into some questions for you, Eric. Let's start out with your own basketball experience as a player. Talk about what got you into the game and what first attracted to you the game of basketball.
I love these stories. I mean, this is what I loved about your other podcast, is I like to hear where, you know, guys kind of got into the game, what their passion was, how they got started, because everybody's story is different, as you know, but there's a lot of similarities, and it's pretty neat to hear, you know, other people's, you know, stories. So mine isn't much different than a lot of people's, but it is, and it has its original. I never thought I was going to be a coach. I love the game of basketball. I literally, and again, listening to some of the other coaches speak, it's amazing how we all grew up, and I just related to everything that they were talking about, and I'll just share it too, because somebody might not have listened to those, but I grew up in my backyard. I'm the youngest of eight, so I have seven older brothers and sisters, three of them being brothers. My older brother played at Notre Dame, played football, was on the national championship team in 88. And my brother Jim was an avid basketball player, played at John Carroll. But he was the oldest. He was 11 years older than I am, and I'm the youngest. And I was kind of a mistake. My parents had 7 kids in 8 years, and then me 3 years later. But I literally grew up in my backyard playing one-on-one, shooting hoops by myself. We were fortunate enough at the house I grew up with, we shared a garage with our neighbors. So the backyard, our driveway was shaped like a half court almost, and we had lights back there, or at least the light on the house that you could see. So, Mike, I was one of those guys that every waking hour I was out since I was probably, let's say, 8 years old, if give or take a year.
Sure.
I was out there shooting by myself, playing games. My brothers would come out and play one-on-one, two-on-two. We'd get the neighborhood kids to come over. I don't remember a day where I wasn't out in my backyard shooting hoops. And whether it's raining, you know, when it rained, we used to be able to palm the basketball even at a young age.
Yeah, the rubber ball.
Correct.
And we weren't playing with the leather balls we're playing with all the time.
Exactly.
Today.
My neighbors loved it when it snowed because I would shovel the backyard for the driveway first, and then I'd go out there and shoot. So that's how I grew up playing constantly. You know, kids today, and I share this in my camps and stuff, like kids today, how many do they, actually go out in your backyard, not just to shoot, but, you know, I've played the whole NCAA tournament in my head, in the backyard. I played the NBA, you know, I was Larry Bird, I was Magic Johnson, I was Kareem, you know, I was all those guys by myself with the imagination how to play. So I kind of grew up that way in my younger years and kind of fell in love with the game through my brothers and through playing. And then from there, it kind of went to the old going to, now your brothers take you to the court and now you got to play. And we share that with our guys today. I share that with my two sons today, that they just don't understand how we grew up. And I grew up at playing at Kensington grade school in Rocky River. It was one court next to a grade school. Barry Clemens was the legend, former Cleveland Cavalier.
I heard Barry speak so many times at Baldwin Wallace basketball camp when I was a kid and play one-on-one against the campers. I remember that it was yesterday.
Unbelievable.
For sure.
And he was the guy that everybody knew. But there was, I would say, 60 guys would show up to play at this one court. And we had a guy, Mike McLaren. He brought his radio. He brought a broom. And he brought a pad and paper, and he put it on the ground, and you signed up when you showed up. And literally, it was 4-on-4. First 4 guys had the first game, and it just went down from there. So as I've heard other coaches say, it was a different time. Like, you had to compete to stay on the court, and if you lost, you literally sat for 2 hours. And so you learn at a young age, one, like, if I'm open, I better make a shot. I better play defense. And winning was important, and it was one of those things that was always, it was instilled in me from a young age. So that's how my playing outside of high school developed. And then from high school, when I graduated, I went to St. Ed's, graduated in 90, and I went away to a school called Penn State Barron to play Division III. I was there for literally 1 month. My girlfriend at the time, who was my wife, soon-to-be wife, I missed her, missed home, being the baby of 8, it wasn't for me. So my intention was I'm going to come home, transfer, go to John Carroll and play at John Carroll. And in the meantime, and I was going to be an accountant, that was my major. My dad was an accountant, I was the youngest of 8, nobody else in my family took up that business.
So, you were obligated. Your dad felt like you had to be the guy, last chance.
Correct. I felt like it was my obligation. Like, I got to, follow in dad's footsteps. But so what happened was, literally within a week or two, as I came home, the coach that was here, Mike Kearns at the time, he was my high school coach. He just asked, hey, Eric, you want to help coach a team, or at least help while you're around? And I did, and literally within 2-3 weeks, it's like a light bulb went out. Like, this is what I want to do.
So there was nothing before that, though, that was driving you to coaching. It was just the actual experience of being out on the court coaching.
Like, other than the passion for basketball, which we all kind of had, like, I knew I loved the game. I still had a desire to play the game. That's what I'm going to make it to, whatever.
Right, absolutely. I completely understand where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, so I still had all those desires. Nobody ever mentioned coaching to me. There's not a coaching tree in my family. Obviously, we all were athletes or played sports, but we never got into coaching. And it never crossed my mind until I started doing it literally on a whim. And I fell in love with it. And I just, like, this is, it became my path, like, quickly, without me really knowing it. But, like, I just said, you know what, I'm going to put off John Carroll right now. I'm going to coach. I'm going to enroll in Cleveland State because it's, you know, it's close. And I don't think I could have enrolled in John Carroll right away anyways because they had started. So I needed a semester. And I got a job down in a factory downtown. So I was literally working in a mill, taking a couple classes, and coaching. And it just kind of, within a year or two, it became a passion. They asked me here at St. Ed's, again, recent grad. They asked me to coach baseball because I played baseball here. So right away I was a head JV baseball coach. I was an assistant freshman basketball coach. And within 5 years, my first year, I was assistant freshman. My second year, I was assistant JV coach. My third year, I was a head freshman coach. My fourth year, I was a head JV coach. And then my fifth year, which is now I'm about to graduate from Cleveland State, circumstances kind of presented themselves, and the job opened up about halfway through my fifth year, where I ended up taking over interim with Pete Novakovic at the time. Pete was the head coach, and I was his assistant. And we went to the Final Four when our stud class was sophomores, and I got the head job the following year when they opened up. So my story was relatively quick. It's different than a lot of other people's because you don't necessarily get a head job at 23. You don't necessarily get a good job at 23.
For sure, yeah.
And I didn't know this is really what I was going to do until it kind of hit me as an 18-year-old who just loved the game. So I think my passion kind of led me to that point, but circumstances really kind of, you know, right place, right time. And I say it to this day, I was kind of lucky to be in the spot that I was in.
2 weeks in to your coaching career, what was it about coaching that you said, man, this is for me? What was it the kids? Was it the process? What was it that made you say, wow, I had never thought about this before, and now I've been doing it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and suddenly I'm seeing a career path that I never saw before?
I'm going to tell you exactly. It was, and it gives me, like, I feel it. You feel those in your body when you talk about it. But it was literally passing on knowledge to other people, and they look at you, and they listen, and they try to do what it is you're asking. And it hit me that I can continue what I love to do. I don't necessarily have to go out and play. I'm making an impact on other people's lives. And until you actually experience that, where you make an impact, and I can't say like there was one kid or one, it was just an overall feeling of helping other people out and kind of seeing their reaction. It was a weird feeling for me, but it was different, and it was something that I really enjoyed. And I'm like, this is a possible future. You know, this is something that I could possibly do. At that point, I still didn't think like this was going to be my career. I still, like,
you were still on the count.
I want to coach. Yeah, I still want to coach. But what pushed that too was I think I took a couple, you know, classes at Cleveland State for accounting. I think I got two D's or two F's in accounting. And I said, you know what?
That was the end of the accounting career.
So I went to become it was funny because I'm like, all right, I think, you know, this is kind of where I think I want to go be a teacher now and be a coach. I love math, so I became a math major. And I think my first two teachers at Cleveland State, one was, and it's no disrespect to anything, one was Chinese. I couldn't understand her. And the other lady was like 88 years old and had a microphone, and I couldn't understand her either. And all you did was take tests back then. Like you went to class, you showed up, there's 500 people in the class, you go take a test and you move on. Well, I didn't understand anything these people were saying, so I was struggling in that. And as every, you know, unintelligent person does, like me, I'm like, hey, I'm phys ed's the way to go. Like,
right.
I'm going to get through. Every coach is a phys ed guy. So I changed my major from math to phys ed. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but your dad was one of my teachers back in the day.
I absolutely do know that.
One of my best teachers I've ever had. Exercise phys, I believe, is what he taught me.
For sure. Kinesiology and exercise phys. I spent many hours in the sub-basement of the lab in Cleveland State. I spent many hours there, believe me.
And he was one of those guys, literally, and he doesn't know it, but he was one of those guys that you saw was a great teacher, was somebody that I knew with basketball, and I kind of knew you just through, like, I remember – he had a son that was really good at basketball. And so all those things kind of together, you see all these positive things. Now, what people don't understand is a phys ed major at Cleveland State, and I don't know if it's like this anywhere else, they make it as hard or harder than any other major in the building. I mean, people don't, like, they say, well, you took gymnastics, and they laugh. I'm like, gymnastics with Mary Motley back in the day was the hardest freaking class I've ever taken. Dance class was hard. Exercise phys and kinesiology, those were like...
I've seen my dad's notes. I've seen his overheads scrawled out with the vis-a-vis pen. I've seen them all.
So, Mike, you can be the first person that, to my kids, I always tell my kids I'm the closest thing to a doctor that's not a doctor.
That's right.
And they're like, yeah, whatever, you're a phys ed major, you know. So, but it was people like your dad that... So, again, timing was everything. It worked out. I graduated from Cleveland State right at the right time where the job opened up here. I was very fortunate that the school here went with a young guy. At the time, what I didn't mention during those changes in my coaching while I was here, the head coach here at St. Ed's changed 5 times in 5 years. There was somebody different. That my head coach took a different job. The coach after that lasted 1 year. The coach after that lasted a year and a half. The coach after that lasted a year. And the interim lasted a half a year. So good news was I learned a lot of bad and a lot of good from a lot of different people in a very short period of time. And that really kind of molded who I was as a coach early on in my career.
So as a young coach, now you're sitting here, you've been the head coach for 22 years. As a young coach, you look back, and what's something that you've learned in the interim that you're much, much better at today? I mean, I'm sure there are a few. I'm sure there are a few.
But some great questions that I love.
But what are some things that you learned from, you know, when you had your first season to now? What are some things that you've learned that make you a better coach today than you were then?
And, you know, like you said, I probably needed to prepare for these questions more, you know, because there's so many. I literally have players from the 96, 97, 98 era come back and say, coach, if you were the coach now, that, you know, back then, we would have, you know, never
right, lost. What we could, know, right, what we could have accomplished.
Played differently, whatever, even, and we won a state championship.
Right, exactly,
you know,
right,
98.
Right.
But there, you can just see it from, a lot of it's just in the way we play and the style and changing things up. The biggest things that I've learned is handling and dealing with the outside stuff is probably the furthest I've come, because when you're around it a long time, I think the biggest thing you learn is those little things don't really matter as much as you think they do, whether it's winning or losing, or whether it's a problem that you're currently having, that you know you're going to fight through a lot of those things. And, you know, you have an issue with a parent. Now that I've been doing it so long, I've had many issues with parents. You know what I mean?
Like, right, it doesn't faze you anymore.
I don't remember the people 20 years ago as much, you know, and it didn't matter, and it doesn't matter. So the biggest thing that I've really taken from that is, you can kind of, you go through an everyday thing understanding what's really important and what's not. And it's not winning and losing. It's not, dealing with a parent. It's not listening to all the BS that's out there, because there is so much out there. And I really think that's where I've grown the most as a coach is, I don't really care what other people say. I really don't care what other people think. Now, I'll listen, because at some times you might have a good point. But in reality, I don't care. I'm going to do what I think is right. And I stuck by that. There was a point in my career that really changed the way I thought. But that's really probably the biggest thing that I've taken from being a young coach to now.
How difficult was it to develop that mentality of, I'm going to do what I – did you have that right out of the gate? Or did you feel like at first somebody brought you an issue, or somebody had a question or a complaint or whatever, however you want to phrase it, and you thought, this is what I should do, but – boy, that's going to be a tough decision. That's going to have some fallback on me. Whereas now, I'm sure you're in a position, you've had the program established that, you know, you're going to do what you think is right and do what you believe.
You know, I heard Sean say this on his, I think he mentioned something about what I'd said at one point to him about how winning takes care of a lot and success takes care of a lot. And over time it does. I mean, you can fall back on a lot of different things, or people maybe respect you or take a step away because they've seen some success, whatever it is. But I don't necessarily think that success isn't wins or losses. It's more about how you handle yourself and how you handle your program. And the thing I'm most proud about is really where our program is. Like, I think people, I know people don't like me or like the program because of being at a Catholic school, being at Ed's, and having success, and I'm okay with that. Like, I've always been okay with that, even from day one.
I would jump in there, because I'm a public school guy.
Yeah.
Went to public school,
right.
Coached at a public school,
yeah.
teach at a public school. And so I think back to like my own experience, and I know that growing up and going to Strongsville, I always wanted to beat. And it's interesting just how much the programs have changed in that. In my time growing up, I felt like Ed's was much more of a wrestling school.
No question.
It was not a basketball school at the time when I was growing up. Really, it was more Ignatius was the basketball school, whereas now Ignatius is probably more known for football. It's just interesting how all those things change. Yeah. So I'm going to phrase this, my little story here, with thinking about it with Ignatius. And I know I always felt like, oh, we got to beat those guys. I never considered the way kids do today. And, you know, they're kind of, I may go to this school, I may go to that school. There was never a doubt from the time I was in second grade. I knew where I was going to go. I knew the kids who I was going to play with and whatever. And so it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, again, I'm sure you do get blowback from people about, oh, you're at Ed's, you can recruit, you can do this, you got, you know, of course you're a good coach, you got, you know, you're bringing in talent from all over the city and whatever. And so I think what I would say to that, and again, I'm as big of a public school advocate as there possibly could be, is that, look, it's just the way that things are, the way the rules are, the way that things are done, then you got to go out and compete.
Right.
And we all get out on the court, and ultimately, like, playing against those teams when I was growing up was good for me. Like, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the challenge. And I think that's how, if you're a competitor, I think that's how you have to look at it.
I agree. And I hope they, and to your point, and kind of what I was, you know, going to as well, is like, that's the way I look at it anymore. And that's where I've grown. It's like, I believe we've done it the right way. Like, it's right way by me. When people say, we do things the right way, I kind of hate when they say that, because there's so many ways.
So many right ways.
There's so many ways to do it. But as long as you're doing it the way you feel, whatever your identity is, whatever your culture is, and you're doing it where you're not cheating, you know, you're not, you know, selling yourself out for anything or anyone. I've never done that in my career and never will. And it's not going to be a parent. It's not going to be a kid. I'm going to do what's best for the program first, the team second, and then the kid. I've always felt like I've done that. And so when people come up to me, and if they ever say a comment like, well, you're there, I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care. Like,
right.
I know what
you've heard it before.
Done. Correct. And to your point, like, hey, then come beat us or come do it. Or if you're at a private school, go do it better. And that's what I'm most proud of, is to your point, St. Ed's, before I took the job, St. Ed's was a wrestling school, it was a football school. And now people actually put basketball in that same category. And I couldn't be more happy to be, you know, the leader of this program. Now, I don't take the, you know, I've had great players, I've had great assistant coaches, I've had so much help along the way, but to just be a part of that transformation and to keep it the way it really has been, you know, I'm just proud of that. And so no matter what people say to me anymore, it's like, hey, listen, we're going to do it the way we do it. And, you know, we're going to piss people off along the way, maybe, but I don't really care, you know, because we're not doing it or cheating the system anyway.
So talk about how you're doing it. Talk about the culture. I know I've heard you mention on, you have 20 standards that you put out there. I don't know if that list is still at 20 or if it's bigger or smaller. And obviously we don't have to go through all of them, but just if you can hit maybe some of the highlights, some of the big major things that you do from a culture standpoint that makes your program what it is and how it represents you and your school and your community and your kids.
Well, it's a great question that can go a lot of different ways. And you know, what your culture is really kind of what you emphasize and who you are as a program. And I think, Mike, it starts one with my coaches, because people ask me all the time about how do you hire coaches or what's the process, or, you know, I could care less about anybody's X's and O's. I only hire people that I trust and that I know. That's it. So it may not have started that way. And I know if you're a young coach out there and, you know, you're starting a program, you think, yes, you might need an experienced guy on your staff who's been through some stuff, but you better know that person and you better trust that person before you actually hire them. I literally have former players. My brother's been on my staff for a while. Coaches and people that I've seen coach or handle people way before I put them on my staff. So I think, you know, one of those things that you have to kind of live by what you preach, you know, practice what you preach, and you have to demonstrate that. And I think it starts with the coaching staff. And me in particular, but I better hire guys that are going to be the same way. And they're going to be loyal. They're not necessarily do what I ask them to do, but represent our school, represent, you know, our program the right way and treat kids fairly.
The most, I'm going to jump in with a quick story. Please. That probably the biggest compliment that I've ever received as a coach was from Phil Schmuck, who I coached with for years and years and years. He's at Twinsburg now. We were at Richmond for 13 years together. And years after we had finished coaching, so this is probably 3 or 4 years ago, we were having a conversation, and Phil said to me, he goes, "The one thing that I appreciated about you more than anything else is your loyalty and the trust that I had in you, that when something was going on, that you were going to back me and back the program and be someone that I could trust to interact with whoever needed to be interacted with in a way that was going to represent him and his program." And to me, there was nothing, you know, there was nothing better to hear from someone that you had worked with for years and years and years that, hey, that's the way he felt. Because certainly that's what I was trying to do.
Sure.
But you don't always know how that's perceived. And so to hear that, and again, this was years after we had coached together.
Right.
And so the fact that that was still on his mind, as, you know, and he's been in two or three different programs since we've coached together, there was just nothing that meant more to me than that particular, you know, that particular compliment.
And he probably missed you tremendously because of that. And I think people undervalue that today, either because somebody gets forced on to them. You know, they want to win, so they see somebody's resume and they're like, hey, this person might help me or give me a little bit more clout, whether it's getting more kids in or whatever the reason is. And my only advice is you have to surround yourself with people that you trust, number one, plain and simple. And like I said, even if it's your brother or if it's if it's somebody that's, you know, you've just seen as a good person and they don't know a whole lot about basketball, you can teach X's and O's. I mean, you can teach that to anybody. You might, you know, obviously a little coaching background is important because they have to relate to kids. But how they handle kids, how they handle themselves is so important. And I really think that's where it starts in our program is in my opinion, we have really good men who maybe have gone through here, maybe have played for me, so they know the experience, so they can pass that on to the kids as they're playing. It's just a huge benefit to have, and that's the advantage of being somewhere for a long time, too, is now we've established a long-term culture where now my coaches understand exactly what it is we want, how they want to teach it to the kids. So it's something that takes time.
When did you realize that? When did you realize that that was so important? How many years in were you before you realized that was a key component of a coaching staff?
You know, Mike, there's a point in my career, and I mentioned earlier, and I'll just go back to this. There was a point in my career early on where we had won a state championship, and I'll mention the exact time and place when this happened because I actually wrote a book many years ago, and I had this in the book, but I think it was 2001. So we literally, my first year went to the Final Four, second year won the state championship. The year after, Juwad Williams was still in our program. He was a sophomore who ended up going to North Carolina. Juwad was a sophomore, and we went 7-14. It's my only losing season here at St. Ed's. We were awful, but we were young. I think we started four sophomores and a freshman. And then the next year, we went 500 and lost at the buzzer to Medina, Tony Stockman. Great team. You know, we lose at the buzzer, so we lost two districts in a row or didn't make it out of districts 2 years in a row, and this is after winning a state championship. And then Juwad's senior year, we lost to Strongsville at the buzzer. So we've lost. Now we didn't get out of districts 3 years in a row. We were below 500, 500, and just barely over 500, and we had a kid named Juwad Williams who was a stud. But so I literally had a booster and another person grab me and pull me in my office. Literally, we want to meet with you. Come sit down. This is you. I mean, their words, not exactly, but basically, you better start recruiting some better players. You better start winning again because you were handed a dynasty here and you've screwed it up already. And you will not last here if this is how you're going to run your program. It was that moment, and these words came out of my mouth to those two guys, is next year, and granted, Juwad had graduated. So 2002, Mike, was the least talented team I've ever had here at St. Ed's. We had Sean Carney was a 5'8 quarterback on the football team who played basketball. We had Ryan Keenan, who was a 6'4. He went to Northwestern for football, but he was a slug. He was slow. He played football. We did have Samario Clancy, who was a young, I think he was a sophomore at the time, pretty athletic. So we weren't going to be really good, but I knew we had great kids. And I just turned to the guys. I said, listen, next year I'm going to beat Ignatius twice, and we're going to win a district championship. And I said, if you cannot accept that as in the basketball program here, they both said, whoa, whoa, whoa. You beat Ignatius twice next year and win a district championship, we will never bother you again, right? So,
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. So, literally that year, I really kind of went to a screw everybody mentality in my own mind. Like, I'm going to do things my way. I'm just going to do it. This is what I believe. I'm going to run the offense I want. I changed my system. I felt like almost all the pressure was lifted off of me just from winning and losing standpoint. I really sold the kids on just buying in as teammates, as buying in how to play. Mike Krzyzewski's book, The Fist, and the 5 points of the fist. That was our mantra that year. Kids, I mean, I really sold it, and we changed the way, you know. So all of that I did on my own, and I kind of bunker mentality with me as a coach, and we ended up splitting with Ignatius during the season, which was for us was good. They were better than us that year. And we somehow, and I kid you not, we're losing to Ava. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I'm sorry to bore people.
No, absolutely. I think this goes back to another point of you remember so many things that come back as you're talking. I get it.
It's crazy. So we're losing to Avon Lake in the first game, sectional championship. We got to buy. We're losing by 7 going into the fourth quarter of the sectional championship. And I'm literally in the back of my mind, you're thinking, all right, we only beat 81s, and I'm going to get knocked out again in the sectional. This is how close I am to maybe quitting, losing my job, whatever it is, at least in my mind. We put on a half-court trap, I remember. We put on what we call a Viking. Boom, boom, boom. We get steals. We win the game by like 4. So we beat Avon Lake. We play Elyria in the semifinals, and we smoke them. We blow them out. So we're going to the district championship again. We're playing Lakewood, who had the Fannin brothers at the time. And I think they beat us pretty good during the season. We have to beat them to go to regionals. And sure enough, it went triple overtime. Triple overtime. So Mario Clancy hits a shot at the buzzer. We win the district championship. So now we've won the district championship, but we only beat Ignatius once. Well, who do we play in the regional? Is Ignatius. So we're playing Ignatius. And this is the game, if people remember, if you're listening, when LeBron played at the Gun, it was the Gun Arena back then. Well, Ed's played Ignatius prior to LeBron and Warrensville, I think, playing right after. So it's sold out. There's 20,000 people there. We beat Ignatius, like, easily. Like, it was one of those freaky, like, we're playing great. We end up beating them by, like, 10. So we go to St. John's. We travel. We have to go to Toledo to play Toledo St. John's. They were number one in the state, 24-0, 25-0. And they beat us literally by 30, exactly by 30, because I remember they did a BS layup at the end to beat us by 30 on their place during the regular season. That's how bad we kind of were at times. Neil Fronapple hits a shot at the buzzer. We beat Toledo St. John's at the buzzer and go to Columbus. So we go to the Final Four, which, again, was – and we end up losing to Columbus Brookhaven, who had they had 6 Division I guys in their first 6 guys. And we lost to them in overtime. We had a chance to beat them. At that point, during that whole season, but during that year and that run – now, granted, we could say had we not beat one of those teams or missed a shot, my whole
trajectory
could have changed or whatever. It didn't. And from that point on, I bought into – to basically it's about having good kids. It's about, you know, you don't need a superstar to win. The team stuff, the, you know, buying into a theme, which was the fist then. We've had theme year after year.
Do you do a theme every year?
Every year. Just different ways to motivate your kids, not only to play hard, but to play together. And going back to our standards and stuff like that, it comes from the fist. It comes from USA Basketball that I have experience with. It just comes from... coaching is so not X's and O's. I mean, there's a part of it we all know. It's like, you know, people say 10% or whatever. It's around there. It's all about motivating. It's all about having them buy in. So when we talk about standards, in that same era is when I started coaching with USA Basketball in 2001. And in that same era is when I started developing standards with USA Basketball, which I took to my team. So we've been using them for like 16, 17 years. And what that meant, Mike, was when I first started coaching, the coaches I played for, we had rules. And We had a great coach during my time too, who had, he like printed out 29 rules and he handed it to people. And it's, you know, one of the rules is like, look the coach in the eye. Another rule is like, if you were late for practice, you didn't start. Another, you know, those things.
Completely different era.
Completely different era. And with the standards, what, and it made sense to me when somebody explained it to me, but you don't know things that you don't know. You know, you don't know what you don't know. So I never heard about standards. I never used them for coaching. I was always a rules guy. But USA Basketball developed those things with Krzyzewski and Don Showalter. And but what standards simply are things that you expect and you live up to and you hold yourself accountable for. So we no longer have a rule. Like if you miss practice back in the day, it's like you either didn't start or didn't play. Well, it doesn't make any sense when you think about it. Like, especially at a place like St. Ed's. Like, yeah, we have kids that live in Lakewood that could walk 2 minutes to get here to St. Ed's. But we also have kids that, you know, drive their Mercedes from Westlake and pull in. And if their car breaks down, they have another car. But we also have kids that come from Cleveland that take 3 buses to get here just to get to practice. And they don't, you know, so why am I making these rules for everybody when it's not? You know,
right. The rules aren't necessarily applicable to everybody in the same way.
Correct. So that's really my mentality with rules is like, listen, I know we treat you the same in a lot of ways, but everybody's different. So we gotta have the standards kind of give you that flexibility to be that way as a coach. So even like things like, you know, pride is a standard. Well, what does that mean? Well, what we do is so when you ask me how many we have, it fluctuates every year. Because what we do, one of our first meetings when we make the team is, we develop our standards.
Together.
So the kids will say, well, pride. And they'll say, all right, well, what does that mean to you? So it may mean something. So they got to kind of explain what pride means to them. And so now they know, you know, like, all right, this is one of our standards. We got to play with pride. And this is actually what it means. And so even if we're in practice and we have a standard might be play hard. Well, that can mean a lot of different things. We talk about that all the time. But I now as a coach, if that's one of our standards, I can look at a kid in practice, and I do that from time to time. It's like, hey, is one of our standards play hard? And they, yes, coach, you know, what? Yeah. Well, you're not doing that. So everybody else needs to get, you know. So you don't necessarily have rules. You just go back to your standards, and kids buy into that, and they accept that, and they kind of go with it. So that's really where the standards, it came from USA Basketball for me originally. It came from Don Showalter originally. And my philosophy all kind of developed within around 2001. So when you say early in my career, 2001 was, I think, my fifth year in coaching, is when a lot of things changed for me, on and off the court. And it really kind of made me, you know, I just started believing in me. You know, you start believing in what I'm doing is actually okay. And I'm going to stick by that. And I'm not, like, you know, I've had people accuse, you know, you get accused for recruiting when you're in a private school, especially when you're successful. When you're not successful, nobody cares,
right?
Right. I can honestly say this, and I say I have never recruited a kid. And I mean, I've never gone to a kid's house in grade school. I've never called a kid on a phone. I've never, now have I walked into a gym and see a kid play? Yeah, but I stick by the rules. Like, I'm not allowed to talk to them, so I don't. I might, you know, show up once in a while. I've never broken a recruiting rule in my entire, and I never will. And when a family comes in, because we make them, like if you're interested in here, it'll be an email to me or a phone call, or somebody says, hey, I saw this kid out there, and my response is, tell them to call the school, you know, and then we'll work it out from there. So when a family comes in here, our conversation is the same with everybody. Like, listen, you're going to get a great education. You hear all the blah, 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 blah. But nothing here is guaranteed. And I tell that to every single person, whether they're good, bad, black, white, 6'8", 5'8", doesn't matter. Nothing here is guaranteed. You're going to earn everything you get. So when you come to St. Ed's and when you play for me, if you make it through as a varsity player, you know you earned every single step of the way. And if that's something you want, then you're going to come here. If that's something you don't want, I understand. I'm not going to be mad. You know, you go somewhere else and that's fine. And I'll tell you, I've lost a lot of good players that who have shown interest in coming to St. Ed's because of those statements. But our program has been better because of it. Everybody knows that that's the conversation that's going on. So they all know that they're all getting a fair shot at what's going on. And I can sleep, you know, I sleep well at night knowing that, like, listen, I'm not selling out for a parent, a kid. If LeBron James would to bring his kids here to St. Ed's, if he stayed here and said, hey, he would get the exact same spiel, and people, oh, right. No, it is. You know, we've had kids who have been like, hey, this is the number one kid in the state, or this is the, and I would flat out tell them, you might start on the freshman team, you know, the first day, because everybody does. First day of tryouts, every single kid starts on the freshman. Now, day two, I might move you up to,
right.
You know.
But, it might be quick.
But I'm not one of those guys that's going to bypass steps to be good right now. And that's part of experience, and that's part of being around a long time, is we're going to take our time to be good every year, and we're going to do it what we feel is the right way. Doesn't mean it's your right way, but right. What we feel is the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hear you saying like two things to me that jump out there for young coaches. One is, I think the confidence in what you're doing, regardless of whether we're talking about culture piece, whether we're talking about X's and O's, whether we're talking about dealing with parents or dealing with administration or whatever the case may be. I think a lot of times when you're a young coach, and I can speak to this myself, mm-hmm. you have this sense of, maybe I know a lot, but you're kind of have this bravado. It's a false bravado that I know what I'm doing, but right. really deep inside, you're not quite 100% sure if what you're doing is right. So I think that's a great point for anybody who's just kind of getting into coaching, is to develop your own philosophy, your own belief system of what you think is right, and then be confident and implement it. And if you do that, you're going to end up in a good place where your program, again, whether it's a fourth grade travel program or whether it's a high school varsity program that's playing games across the country, you're going to end up with the kind of program that you could be proud of. And that's really what I hear you saying.
You said it perfect. I mean, first of all, success isn't defined by, you know, wins and losses. Everything is relative. And you have to learn, you said it perfectly. It's not necessarily what you teach, it's how you teach it, one. So whatever your system is, believe in it. You know, teach it the right way and buy into it and sell it to the kids and do it all the right way. And we all as coaches have doubts. You're like, nobody's perfect here, and you're going to screw up, and it's okay. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to lose. It's okay to, you know, all of these things don't make you less of a person, less of a coach. You got to believe in it and sell it. And I think so many people out there worry about wins and losses. They worry about being right all the time. And they worry about all of those things that you shouldn't be worried about. You know, just do what you think. Again, do what you feel is right. If you put a little bit of time, like if you sit in front of a computer, you can find any plays and drills you want. So it's okay to do that. You know, it's okay. And it's okay to take it to practice and then, man, do it with enthusiasm. Man, act like you know it. And if you screw it up, it's okay. You know, especially kids, when they see you're human at some point, you know, they buy into you more than that. And
Don't you think that's a difference in our era as players versus the players of today, in terms of the way we are as coaches today building relationships with kids compared to back in the day where it was definitely a coach-player separation? The relationship just wasn't there. And a lot of coaches that I experienced weren't necessarily interested in building the kind of relationship that you're interested in building with your kids, or that I'm interested in building with the kids that I work with. And I think that's such a different way of going about things. It's so much better way that we're doing it today.
It is. But to that point too, Mike, I think there's probably, because we all remember our good coaches when we were younger, and those coaches were ones that did develop relationships. I think it was going on. It probably just wasn't publicized the way everything's publicized today. I think people looked up to like a Bobby Knight because he was successful and he was demanding and demeaning and probably did everything. I don't care what anybody says. He was a great coach, but he didn't do it the right way. I mean, the way he treated people.
He attained wins and loss successes. Correct. And again, I think he had a positive impact on, I'm sure you can find lots of his former players that will tell you that he was a tremendous influence in their life and tremendously positive. And yet at the same time, as you're about to say, you can see where there's, you know, issues with him of doing things the way that.
Listen, I'm not saying it was wrong, and I'm not saying it was his style, and people went there to play for him, and it worked. And again, we talk about coaching styles. That's who he was. He bought into it. And that's, I think, when I was a young coach and he was the hot commodity back when I first started, part of me wanted to try to be like him because that's what I thought. So I was a yeller and a screamer when I first started coaching. Like I was. But that wasn't me, and I knew it. And that was part of the transformation of me as a coach, is Listen, I'm not a yeller. Why am I yelling and screaming?
I'm like, the same way. Yeah, I agree completely.
I would rather have a sit-down conversation with the kid and be like, you know, hey, let's work on this together. And one of the things that I've always done with my kids, and I tell kids this to their face, to their families, and even in our meetings before the season, if I meet with parents, is I will never embarrass your child in a game, in front of other people. I will never embarrass him in front of other, you know, players and stuff like that. If I have an issue with him, I'm going to bring them in here and we'll talk about those issues, which means I expect the same from you as parents and your kids. Like, they will not embarrass me, and that's where the line is crossed. So I don't want to see a kid getting in my face. Now, again, in heated times, it's happened. I mean, and when you get to know kids, though, when you start building relationships, people don't understand. You can get away with, it's not about winning and losing, it's about relationships. And when you have good relationships with people, you can do a lot more, but you know what you can do. Like, I swear a lot in practice. It's one of the things I always try to work on and get better. But when you joke about that with your kids, or when they kind of know, like, you're not demeaning them. It's just part of your vernacular, and sometimes it's part of theirs. And when you know it's not, but if you know it's a right situation to do it and not to do it, you choose.
You can pick and choose, right?
Yeah, it's. But that's based on building relationships. That's not based on this is who I, you know, like, I'm a coach and I'm going to come in and F-bomb you. You know, and some people have that mentality. I see other coaches, this is how they do it. This is how I'm going to do it. No, take who you are and your identity, build those relationships, and become the best coach you can be. And if you can ever figure that out as a coach, and it ain't easy. You're going to go through times where you know, maybe you're not successful in your mind, so you're going to try and change. You're going to change up philosophies in ways that you have to understand that that's normal and that's okay, and to keep going forward if this is something that you really want to do.
So if you think about a kid who's been with you for 4 years, they come through your program, they come in as a ninth grader, they leave as a senior, and it's 10 years down the road, it's 15 years down the road, and they call you up and they say, Coach, you know, you made me a better basketball player, but more importantly, you taught me X. What is X that you'd want your kids, or that you've heard from kids that come back to you, that you've taught them beyond the game?
You know, I don't want to sound like a coach. Like, you're never going to impact every single kid you've had. It's just it's not going to happen. And people that say, like, every kid comes back and does this. Now, I will say that if we had, you know, 100 kids, 93 of them have come back at some point. Good, bad, and different, they've come back. We've had some that haven't. Not everybody goes through the same experience. And again, the older you get, you understand that. And you try to hit more guys different ways. But because of that, I mean, I literally got a text yesterday from a guy that graduated 8 years ago. And he just simply said, thank you for everything you've done, because he just got a new job. You've taught me to be the man and what it means to be a man in the right way. And, you know,
that encompasses a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that encompasses a lot. If you're doing that and your program is churning out that type of person.
I mean, it's like, I'm tearing up now because I am an emotional guy, but it's like things like that. Like, you don't get them every day, but you get, I have guys that are playing right now. And sometimes I've had guys who will graduate, they'll leave, love you, coach, and you really don't hear from them while they're playing in college. And then you're like, oh, man, that kid maybe didn't really appreciate what was going on. And then a year after college, he's calling you up saying, man, you don't realize the impact you had. And you have to understand, like, now they moved on to college. Like, maybe they moved on from their grade school coach to you. So they're being dealt with by more coaches and stuff like that. So they're not thinking about you every day. They've moved on to a different. But at some point, they realize the impact that you have had. And again, that's the advantage of doing this for so long. Like, I don't look at guys now and they go away as freshmen and oh man, this kid isn't texting me. It takes time. And we all know this. I heard other coaches. I think Coach Quaz talk about it, and Coach O'Toole. When it really is that feeling of when somebody comes back and they just make a statement like that, like, you made an impact on my life, whatever. And if it's positive, you know, or I, you know, just the simple words of like, hey, I love you, coach, you know, you know, those things hit you.
There's nothing better. There's nothing better than that. Because sometimes you feel And I don't know how you feel about it, but sometimes I think being, especially when you're sitting there in the head chair, it's isolating. You feel like you're on this island, and of course, you know, we're under scrutiny, and there's just so many people that have a hand in what you want to do, and they're watching, and they've got an opinion and this and that. And so a lot of times you hear a lot of negative coming at you.
Yeah.
And so when you get a former player who comes back and says, hey, you made all the difference in my life, whether it's right now immediately, like you said, or whether it's later, however it could be, I don't think as a coach there's anything more gratifying than having an impact on kids for the long term.
And if it happened like once or twice and you've been here 25 years, maybe it's an issue. I mean that. Like, but if it happens, you know, if you're getting, you know, every year you're getting different people, different kids, and it builds, it just makes you feel good. And I'm not, you know, saying demeaning anything. I'm just saying like that's – like you'll never see me wear a state champion. Like I've never worn them. They're literally in a drawer – in my house, I don't even know. Like, if you ask me, I know.
Might take
somewhere.
You a few minutes
I know
to find them.
Somewhere. But it's like, to me, it's not about that. Like, I trust me, I'm.
You want to win. You want to win.
I mean, trust me.
I get it.
I'm gonna pound them. I'm gonna when I go up in our gym and I see the state championship banners, nothing gives me more pride. But I every year I move. Like, this is another year. It's another challenge. It's a different group of guys. That's what I love about high school coaching. Like, I love coaching high school because every year it's a different challenge, and I look at it as a different challenge. Even if I had kids, you know, the age that they're at right now, when a kid is 16 and all of a sudden he comes back and he's 17, he may have grown 2 inches or he may have put on 20 pounds. This is like the greatest level to coach kids because there is so much change year to year. I get so fired up at the beginning. Like, every year is a challenge to me. And that's, you know, one of the other things that I've done as a coach, I go in every year. People don't understand. Like, I go in with a blank slate every year. I'm not like, and it's different. Like, it's, and this is just the way I do it. I'm not telling other coaches to do it. But I go in because I'm at a school where we get kids when they're ninth graders. We don't get them when they're third grade. And, you know, where I think there's an advantage that some schools have that they can build their program and their system. We don't get it. But that's what I love. Is every year I can look at the guys that we have, and trust me, they're talented. And I can kind of say, all right, we're going to be fast this year. Let's try to play a certain way. Or we're going to be bigger and slower. So every year I've kind of changed who we are, and I do that on purpose because it energizes me. And if it energizes me, it's going to energize the kids. And I'm sorry that just popped into my head, but that was one of those things that, like, I love about coaching, and I just – that's what, to me, it's about. I don't – like, the state champ, great. Like, every once in a while you can sit back and say, man, we were pretty good. Hey, those were great memories. But I look to tomorrow – like, I'm looking for the next challenge, and I'm looking for how am I going to impact these next group of kids, and how are we going to win this year? And that's all that matters to me. So, yeah, I want to win the state championship this year. So I'm going to do everything I can to win this year. But once that's over, I've moved on. I want to do it again next year. You know, so it's a constant thing that I don't need to walk around and show people or talk about it. I just want to go out there and do it again with this group. And my personality is always different, too. Like, I always feel guilty, too. Like, I'm just one of, like, you know, I feel guilty because, like, if I want to focus on the here and now. So I always feel like I'm doing a disservice to the people that are here in front of me when I'm always, like, if I'm always talking
about
old,
what happened, this team this did that, or you guys.
I'll bring it up as examples.
Right.
But I try to stay away from that stuff as much as possible, like, really buy into the kids that are in front of me. And they know. I mean, they know there's a history here. They know that what they came here for. So all of those things, you know, I think kind of generate what our culture is. It's just kind of, you know, always, you know, be yourself, create our own story, build those standards, that type of stuff.
Absolutely. So let's jump into, you've mentioned a couple of times your involvement with USA Basketball. Yeah. So talk a little bit about how you initially got involved with it, mm-hmm. and then how your role has kind of changed with USA Basketball and how important it's been to your career.
Yeah, this is going to be a long podcast.
That's all right. No, I got time if you do.
listen, first of all, you talk about right place, right time. And one of the things that I'm most proud of that I'll say off the bat is USA Basketball, when I first started, which is 2001, is totally different than what it is today. And I and Don Showalter are the only two, well, at the high school level, because Sean Ford, who a lot of people know, is like the director of basketball operations, and Jim Tooley is the head of USA Basketball. Those two guys and Don and I are the only four people that are left from 2001. So I'm always proud of that. They've always asked me back. They've always, you know, I've always gotten a role there. But literally back in the day, how I got involved, and talk about nepotism, my Uncle Tim, who used to be the athletic director at North Olmsted High School, And he's always been a big influence on my life because he's been in athletics and public schools and always kind of telling, you know, giving me advice about how to coach and handle people. Well, he was on, he then was elected to a National Federation board, and he left North Olmsted at some point to go basically live in Indianapolis and be full-time on this national board. But at that time, the national board, they needed some people to be nominated for USA Basketball. Nobody even knew what it was. It was kind of thought of as like, this is just like an AAU thing or a summer thing or travel thing. So my uncle's like, hey, you know, my nephew's a coach at St. Ed's. I think I remember, like, hey, Eric, somebody from this USA thing.
Hey, you want to just go out there? Hey, right, you never know what might happen.
Literally, and he goes, gotcha. I don't even know if you're going to get on, like, whatever. And I'm assuming I got it because nobody else was even nominated. Because when I went out there, Don Showalter had been doing it. So it was around for a little while. And the only thing, when they first started was they had what they called hoop festivals, okay? And they had like one game a year where not every year they had the hoop summit back then, but it was a little different than it is now. And they'd have a USA team versus an international team. But the hoop festivals was literally, we would invite like 60 kids from around the country and they would just like for a weekend or like 4 days, you would just kind of practice and play against each other. And then they'd play games and they'd split it up like east, west, north, south, almost like an all-star camp type of thing. And that's really what USA Basketball was when I first got there. And there was like, and how I got on, I was what they called a committee member. So I didn't even know what the hell that meant.
All right, I'm on a committee. Yeah. Woo.
So they fly you out literally, Colorado Springs, Colorado. So you're going to the Olympic Training Center. And it's, again, you're so young. I mean, how many years? 60. I'm not even 30 yet.
What am I doing here? This is pretty cool.
I'm going out to Olympic Training Center. I'm out there. So you go out there, and the Olympic Training Center is probably one of the least most impressive things that you see.
I've been there.
Right. But it's cool. But it's, you know, it's up in the mountains. It's got the nice little layout. You know what it's like. So you're kind of like, yeah, okay, you know. And then we do like, you literally, it was just like kind of like an open gym type. It wasn't this real well-oiled, and I never really knew what it was. But they were getting, you can tell they were getting serious. Like Sean Ford and Jim Tooley were pretty innovative guys. Don Showalter was just he was a committee member like me. So me and him got to know each other. But Don was like, you know, Don's, you know, 15 years older than me, and we had four other guys that were out there that were either coaches or committee guys, and they were all 60, 50 years old, and I'm this 20-something-year-old.
You're the young guy. They're like, hey, let's ask this young guy something. Maybe he can tell us something.
So they were probably like, who the hell is this guy? That's, you know, it's so that's my
uncle. Your career wins didn't stack up with their career wins?
It was like, here's Coach Flannery. He's got 60 wins, and, you know, Don Showalter, 490. And like, holy shit.
That's funny.
That's kind of how it started. And USA Basketball since then, so my job literally as a committee member by definition, I have to help find coaches from around the country that could do some of the things that we do and help identify players. So if I see a good player, I just shoot the name over to, you know, whoever's in charge at the time, and they would gather the list, and then we would do like a phone call, a conference call, and we'd get on there and discuss players and discuss coaches and people, you know. So that's kind of how it worked. And it's kind of stayed like that for maybe, you know, 5-10 years, and it was kind of the same thing. And I was a committee member, and your term was 4 years. So you did it for 4 years, and typically you don't know. So they asked me back the next year, and they asked me, so their coach Showalter and I started to become pretty close, and he really became kind of a mentor to me. He's a guy that, you know, this guy's a great guy. I don't know if he's, you know, but he was just a great guy. He took me in. We would talk hoops. I would kind of be like his little brother on these trips. Like, I'd jump in the car with him. He and I would drive everywhere together. We'd screw around. He's got a similar personality to me. We're a little sarcastic.
You
got to
tell me the Pikes Peak story.
Oh God!
So I saw that online. The article that I read did not give any details. So at some point we can jump back to that goodness. If you want to. So
he became one of my mentors, really, about the standards and things that the way he thought. And again, going back to being a young coach, you realize, like, these guys are still teaching a lot of things that I taught or that how I emphasize. Basketball is not rocket science. And I think we always want to try to find that formula of something different. Like, man, there's some magical thing. Like, why is Don Showalter out at USA Basketball? Why is Eric Flannery out at USA Basketball? I'm no different than you or anybody else. I just got lucky. I was right place, right time. Somebody nominated me. Now I'm involved in this thing. Now, I think I'm advanced more now just because of all the people I've talked to and taken in. So I've learned a lot. but I'm no different than anybody else and no better. I just have more experience in certain areas. So I took all that in, and literally my claim to fame too is, and I share this with USA Basketball all the time, I bust these guys' balls all the time, is like LeBron. I tell people I discovered LeBron, you know, and everyone's like, well, back then we only brought out seniors to this hoop festival that we called it. And we actually moved it around. So we did it, we went to like San Antonio one year, we went to San Diego one year. So I'm getting to see parts
some good
of the
trips.
Country.
That's I mean, some good trips. Those are good places to go.
Like this is, I'm like living the dream. Yeah. I go out there. I'm seeing some of the best kids in the world in high school, and even back then, Mike, you have. So getting back to LeBron's, it's about this time, right? It was 2002. So I'm only a year or two in it, and we're on a conference call, and you only take seniors, and LeBron was a freshman at the time who just started blowing up a little bit, but he was more local. Like nobody, LeBron wasn't LeBron right away.
Correct.
But it went fast, you know. So I'm on this conference call, and they're like, hey, we had an injury to a guy. We need somebody else. And they did invite, I think, a junior at the time. And I just threw it. I'm like, hey, there's a kid up here. His name's LeBron James. He's pretty good. He's starting to blow up. And I don't know anything. I'm just like, I actually felt nervous saying it on the thing. I'm like, hey, this is Eric.
That's hilarious. I think I got a guy. Maybe.
I don't, you know, because, you don't know where.
When was the first time you saw him?
I saw LeBron. He scrimmaged us when he was a freshman. Keith Ambrott, who just left here, is a great friend of mine. Keith was a head coach at St. Vincent St. Mary's, and he brought us into scrimmage. And we had just won the state championship the year before. And Keith was, Keith is one of those guys that he's going to play the best. So he brought his team up to scrimmage us. But Mike, he didn't stand out. Like I wasn't like, oh my God, there's LeBron James. And I live in my own bubble quite, so often that I don't really, I'm so worried
about my team. You're focused on your team. Right, you're worried about your team.
So people would be there later on like, hey, you scrimmaged them. That was it. We never played them in high school. Keith got the job and went to college, and Drew came in, and the schedules were set, and all of a sudden he blew up. Back to LeBron's story, I nominated him. We fly out to, I remember I brought him, I think I brought him lunch because we're traveling together, and I was bust him if I see him like he's still owe me lunch. but that he was on, like I'd never seen it before. Carmelo, and again, to this day, you see kids as their juniors and seniors. You don't realize what their future is going to be. So, now, like Carmelo Anthony was a year older, Chris Paul, Sebastian Telfair. I mean, these were guys that were all at this camp at the same time. And LeBron was head and shoulders above everybody else. It was like, oh, my God. And that was my oh, my God moment where I was like, man, this kid is going to be something special. And of course, to this day, USA Basketball, I was like, that was me. So I got him started and all of that. And it's just a funny, we always go back to that. But so since then with USA Basketball, I've been a committee guy four years. And then they said, listen, you can only serve two consecutive years. But then they changed the rules. And then they said, you can come back again. So I came back one more time as a committee member for 12 years.
They eliminated term limits just for you. Nice.
It's been bizarre. I've been very fortunate. And I think most of it's really for Showalter. But I just have to be on his coattails.
All right.
And if you're on the committee, you can't coach. So because your job is to name the coaches. So they took me off the committee after 12 years and wanted me to coach. So those 4 years, I was fortunate enough, U16 with Coach Showalter. We went to Uruguay, won a gold medal in Uruguay in the Americas, and then we went to Dubai and played in the World Games and won a gold there, the 17s. And we had like Terrence Ferguson, we had Jason Tatum with the Celtics, Harry Giles. We had an unbelievable team. And so I did those, and I did 2 years of the Hoop Summit. So I coached the USA versus the World out in Portland, Oregon. So I was the coach for those. I mean, Mike, I'm a kid from Lakewood, Ohio, who never, like, you go back to the story of just being a kid shooting in the backyard. And there's times I literally, like, pinch myself when I'm traveling. I'm like, my wife and I went to, we're in Dubai. And I'm like, who would ever.
What are we doing in Dubai?
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And it's basketball. Basketball has taken me places, has given me so many great experiences throughout my life that I tell people, I can die tomorrow, retire tomorrow. And I've had an unbelievable experience of just basketball and relationships, meeting people, traveling the world. I know how fortunate I have been. And my hope is just to try to pass that on somewhere along the line that somebody else gets to experience the same thing. Because I don't need to try. I'm not a huge traveler. But once I left the country and experienced the rest of the world, I'm like, I'll do it. I love it. You see different things that you never knew. You start learning things about yourself you never knew. But we've had some great stories on these trips with USA guys. The relationship you build with some of these guys, like, you know, take a Jason Tatum, for instance. He's playing the Cavs. I'm not a, as they call it, jock sniffer. I'm not a name dropper.
You're not taking selfies?
Like, I'm not. Like, if I see him, we'll just, like, talk in the, it'll be a quick text. But, like, it's, you know, it's just the relationships that you build and you know that you built, that it's, you take pride. So I'll tweet out once in a while, like, hey, Jason, you know,
right,
great job.
Right, great job, yeah, right.
You know, whatever. But it's more just to, you know, promote the program or to just reach out to him.
Yeah, to keep the relationship going.
And they've been great. So you develop those when you coach them. That's the one thing you don't really get as a committee guy, because you don't spend as much time with them, but you still spend a little bit of time with them. So it's been a great experience.
So what do you think going forward? What are there going to be more opportunities with USA Basketball for you? What do you see going? What do you see going forward?
No idea. No, I mean, USA Basketball is changing so rapidly, and that's kind of the funny thing that I joke with Sho when we talk is, like, back when we were there in 2001, it was just a couple guys. Literally, it was like even at these first practices, there was like five or six of us, like, rolling the ball out with all these studs, and to see where it's at now. We didn't even have offices back then. We were just, like, meet at the facility and do our thing and then stay in a hotel. Now they have the facility. They have USA Basketball offices. I mean, I went out there this past year. They just put them. I took pictures. It's unbelievable to see where it's grown. Kind of gives me a little pride. Like, it's like, man, I was there at the beginning, right? And to see where they're going to go, obviously, with the rule changes and the NCAA. I give USA Basketball so much credit because, one, they're trying to do what they feel is the right thing to do for kids. They're trying to take out parents and not to neglect them, but just, like, let's get back to doing what's right for the kids, teaching the game of basketball. They're not afraid to say, like, hey, we're doing some things wrong. We need to change. You know, these youth clinics that they're doing across the country, the coaches clinics that they're doing across the country. All of those things, people don't understand how much time and effort that they have done to put into just that. And it's only going to get bigger and bigger. And I know everybody's looking for that solution. I don't think there's one solution, but USA Basketball is trying the best they can to just put it back into teaching kids and trying to do things, you know, for the kids, which I think is really important.
Yeah, and I think as they get more, I don't know if publicity is the right word, but just as it becomes more well-known in terms of the guidelines and things they're trying to do with youth basketball and remake everything, you know, anytime I see anything that they're putting out, yeah, it falls in line with everything that you or I would know as a basketball person, as a basketball coach. Yeah, I can see why we should be doing this as a developmental piece of what we're trying to do to help kids.
And to that point, Mike, and this is what I think they do, and I do my best not to complain about, one, what other people are doing, two, you know, what other programs are doing or what AAU is doing. Listen, just start trying to be part of the solution. You know, like, there's some really bad stuff that goes out there and everything. I'm not a person that's going to, you know, yes, I have some disagreements with a lot of things. But my philosophy, and this is changes more and more as you get older, it's like, you know what, just shut up and start, like, just
figure out a way to make it right.
Do what's right with your own program. Right. Do what's right with your own kid. If I run camps now, I try to do it the way I think it should be done and leave it at that. And then maybe it'll catch on. And if it doesn't, you did what you could. But stop complaining about it. That's not how we're going to solve any problems and change our game. You know, we need to change our game by teaching kids the right way to do it. Teach it at an early age. Quit worrying about what other people are putting on social media and trying to, you know, make what's great about themselves. It'll play itself out in the end.
You'll appreciate this story. So I was at a 3-on-3 league game, and I'm standing there. I'm watching my son play. Guy that I sort of know walks over to me, and we're talking, and this little kid comes walking in the door and walks over to him and gives him a high five, and the guy turns to me and says, he's the number one ranked third grader in the state of Ohio. He's playing with my son on my son's team. And I just turned and I looked at him and I was like, oh, okay, that's great. And I'm like, the kid comes up to my knee and how is anybody, I'm like, who's rating him as the top ranked third grader in the state? And yet, here's a guy who, again, people just don't know. They don't know what – to expect. They don't know what's right. They, you know, you have, and I'm sure you see it with parents that come into your program for the first time who they don't have any other kids who have ever played at a high level. They don't have any other kids who have ever been recruited. They don't have any other kids who have been quote unquote ranked. They don't know what AAU program they should play for. They don't know anything. Yeah. And so I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I'm sure you see it as a high school coach. I see it in limited duty with what I do. Just educating parents, I think, is a huge piece of what is wrong with the system.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And our system right now is based on social media. It's based on what everybody else is doing. It's based on trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's based on, you know, you trying to make your kids look as good as they possibly can. Mike, there is no like easy solution, and it's not going to change quickly, and it's probably going to get even worse. In the last 5 years, it's gotten as bad as I've ever seen it. And I never blame kids, because it's not the kids' fault. They're just feeding off what people are telling them. And I just go back to sticking with what I believe in. Like, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to earn it if you come here. And if I see a kid that's ranked third grade, I don't care. And I'll tell you that. Like, if somebody told me that, I'd be like, hey, I really don't care. But here, the problem I always have, and I just had this conversation with Keith Ambrod, because he and I, we have great stories, because he's old school like me as far as that kind of stuff. Like, he's just like, dude, just do it. This is how we do it. And that's
right.
Like,
and
whatever.
I'm doing it the way I do
it. Wrong, whatever. Like, yeah. we'll live with it. But dealing with parents, and listen, you all love your kids, and we get it. But some of these people just don't know, you know, how to do it the right way. So I get frustrated as, you know, I always look at myself like, all right, now, like, hey, I've been coaching for over 20 years, that we've had some success. I coach with USA Basketball. Listen, this is how you are supposed to do it, and just do it like this, and everything will be okay. And I tell a parent that, even at a young age, because I have parents that, you know, come to camp. Like, I have a fourth grade coach. I see all, like, how are we supposed to go about this? And I'll tell them. I'll lay it out for them. Like, you don't need this, 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 and this.
This is what you need to do.
And they won't do it still.
Yep.
And that blows me away. And I always say, like, why? Well, I told, well, his buddies were doing this, or he got asked to play on this AU team is ranked. And it's just like, it blows me away. Like, I slap my head and I, you know, when it is what it is. So you're not, going back to my point, you're not going to change everybody. People don't necessarily hear what you say, you know, so they kind of just wait. I'm kind of the guy who laughs last kind of guy. Like, I always just sit back and, like, listen, in the end, I know I'm probably going to be right in this whole situation. So even with their own players and their parents, it's like, just trust me. And if you trust me, I'm guarantee it's going to work in the end. I just guarantee it may not be the same way as some other schools. I may not flash it on Twitter all the time, or I may not, like, it may not be as high profile or whatever, but you're at St. Ed's, you're going to be seen, you're going to go to the school that you deserve to go to, and I'm going to help you in every way I can to help you. And if you don't trust that, then you don't belong here. So, you know, that's it. It's just bad. The way parent, your story about that parent, I've seen way too many times from other people. And I've heard people tell me about their kids' ranking. People have sent me videos of their fifth graders and sixth graders, and I don't watch them. I might email them back, like, thanks, and that's it. I won't say, like, one way or another. It's crazy, and I don't know how to change it quickly, because it's a cultural thing. But it's going south fast, and I feel sorry for the kids. I don't feel sorry for the parents.
So talk about your own kids. Last topic. We've been going for a while, so let's talk about this as a last gasp here. So your two sons now are going to be together again.
Yeah.
At Carroll. Cool. So talk about your experience coaching them, and then I know your daughters are younger, correct?
Yep.
So let's hit your sons first, and then jump back into your daughters after you talk a little bit about coaching your sons and what that experience was like and what you learned about coaching your sons. Because I always, as a parent myself, coaching my kids, I'm always curious to hear what other coaches say about that process.
Yeah, it's again, another, we'll probably talk another half hour here.
Might have to go part two.
Yeah, right. Listen, talking, the first thing I'm going to tell you, Mike, and I tell every coach if you're listening, is don't take my experience for your experience. Don't, you know, hey, Coach Flannery coached his kids this way. This is what I'm going to do. Or I saw this. And I get coaches that ask me this a lot because I've been through it now, like recently. And I'm good with it. Like, I'll tell you exactly how I did it. Or if you call me, we'll talk about it. But I never want people to think like, oh, you know, that's the right way again. Or that's the, like, it was my way. This is my relationship with my kids. This is how I chose to deal with my kids, right or wrong. I think it's worked out. I've always, and just to kind of go back to just my situation here at St. Ed's, I mean, Sean, who's my oldest, who's now a junior at John Carroll, Sean was born in 1998, which is the year we won the state championship. So Sean has lived, and all my kids have lived their whole life, and I've been a head coach, other than 1 year, you know, all their lives. So they've only known St. Ed's, they've only known our gym, my office, you know, and home, and but I never wanted, and I told my kids as soon as they were old enough to understand this, I never wanted basketball to be their life because it's mine. I just, like, that was my number one, you know, rule as a dad is like, listen, you know, just because I chose this, I don't want you to have to choose it or whatever. So at any time, you know, you don't like it, you don't want to do it, just tell me. If you don't want to be here, just tell me. Now, again, you're a parent and they're a kid, which other people have to understand. Sometimes they're afraid to tell you, too. And you, when your kids are, like, I learned this more and more as I got older. But as they started growing up and through St. Ed's, it was kind of my whole thing to coach my sons here at St. Ed's. I mean, I was looking forward to it, like, man, it's coming. But I never wanted it to control my, you know, how I coached or how I perceived it. And I never wanted them to feel the pressure of coming here. No, in the meantime, so Sean came here as a freshman, and his freshman year, after his freshman year, I Mike Brown was a close friend of mine from the Cavs, and I coached Elijah. Brown was here while he was here at the Cavs. There was an opening, and Mike actually offered me the MBDL job, the Canton Charge job, the head job, while I was here, and I had to turn it down. Like, it was a tough conversation. I remember David Griffin, Mike, and Mike Ganzi was there at the time. We sat down, went to lunch, we talked about the job. You know, I heard him out about everything, and at some point I said, I'll get back to you. You know, I waited my you know, whole life to coach your kids. Sorry.
Right, now to walk away from that, even with a good, yeah, even with it being a great opportunity.
So that was such a changing point too, is because that whoever they hired in my stead coached it for 1 year. Now he's coaching the NBA. He's making, like, you know, my wife's right, always like, why the hell did
you? Yeah, right. You should have taken that job. What's wrong with you?
So, but that's how important it was, because when they were growing up, if I went to their games, I never went to any of their practices other than, like, at the end, if somebody else was coaching them, I wanted somebody else to coach them. I didn't want them thinking like, hey, there's the Ed's coach or there's their dad. I wanted none of that pressure. If I went to a game, I'd kind of sit up in the stands. I never cheered. I would clap here and there. I never got like LeBron, got up and I never did that. I just always was like let them have their light and let them work it out. And I never wanted to be, I consciously made an effort not to be overly excited or mad.
Right, you know? Understood.
So that's kind of how they were raised as they were younger. When they got here to St. Ed's, I talked to my coaches, and literally because we trust each other and we have those great relationships, it was pretty much like they're going to coach them in the sense of making decisions. Is he going to start? Is he not going to start? If you see me being too hard on just him, tell me. But it wasn't like, hey, you're going to coach him, I'm going to stand over here. It was more like, you know, guys, you're responsible for those decisions. Like, if I'm playing him too much, tell me. If I'm not playing him enough, tell me. Because I can be both. And we had rules in our family, and they weren't, like, laid out. It was just like, listen, guys, again, we're basketball. We're a basketball family when it comes to this stuff. We're not talking basketball outside of St. Ed's. You know, it's like, you know, we'll if you want to, then we'll talk about it. Otherwise, I'm not going to bring it up. I'm not allowed to bring it up. So stop me if I ever do. And we never did. We never talked basketball outside of basketball. Now, I think that hurt our relationship a little bit too, because these are things that we shared. And because you put in these rules, I think maybe we could have developed more relationship-wise somewhere along the way. Again, it's not the perfect thing, but it's what we chose to do and what we did. My kids are unbelievable. I mean, to come to a place like St. Ed's, what you know, where it is right now, and to walk in here with that pressure of being the coach's kid and to try to be successful at the same time. And my oldest kid's 5'7" and a little point guard, but he was a gym rat from the beginning. So he was a kid that when I was running camps, when he was literally 2-3 years old, he was in the camp dribbling balls. He was jumping in stations at 4. I mean, he was doing stuff. So I always knew that he would have a knack for playing, and he became really good. And that being 5'7" really made him angry, you know, you know, a lot of ways, yeah, which really fueled his fire. Yeah, and he had a great – he was very successful. And it got to a point where I would not play him, where my coaches would be like, you got to give him the ball more, put the ball in his hand, do whatever. So that was our relationship through that. And it worked out well. He had a great – we won a state championship when he was a sophomore, which is the greatest feeling ever. We went to the Final Four when he was a starter as a junior. We lost in the district championship to Ignatius his senior year, which was expected. They were better than us. So it was an unbelievable ride for him. He's now at John Carroll. He's having great success there. He loves it there. And then PJ came along, my second one, and we talk about, you know, treating kids different, and you have to understand your kids are different. PJ's 6'3", PJ's 200 pounds, where Sean's 5'7", 130. They don't, you know, they're totally different body types. PJ hated basketball, like didn't really buy into it. I don't want to say hated it. He just was like, hey, whatever.
Indifferent.
You know? Yeah, like I didn't. So we never, you know, I never pushed him, always trying to be supportive in other things. And but he always played, and he wasn't, I wouldn't say he was bad. He just wasn't like the best player on the team. He was always a little pudgy, you know, those kind of things. And it was okay. I was one of those guys where like, hey, it's a little, you know, upsetting personally, but it's
understood,
like, I don't care. Like, yeah. I'm happy if you're happy, you know, whatever. But he came to Ed's. He played freshman as a freshman. The coaches there were great with him, and they're like, you know, Coach, he's actually coming around. He's actually getting pretty good. And I'd be like, yeah, whatever, yeah, you know. And I'd watch his games, and I'd go to his away games. I'd leave practice early. I would never, and quick advice to parents who are coaches, is try to put your kids first when it's outside of, you know, don't miss important events because of it's – coaching isn't that important. You know, your team isn't that important to beat out.
That family balance is
it's huge.
It's huge, and just like you're describing, it's hard to convince yourself sometimes in the moment,
correct,
that that's true.
Correct. But and that's one of the things that I'm proud of my upbringing with them is I always try to make their games. I always try to be there for them if there was a big event versus St. Ed's basketball. I'm never going to put this before them. And again, having a great staff and people around you built that. But then PJ, by sophomore year, he played JV as a sophomore. So he's going through the process like every kid does. And he ended up getting a little better, and he had a pretty good JV year, started making some shots. And to his point, he then started taking it serious. Like, he started falling in love with the game. And it really wasn't until then to where he really saw some success in himself. I let him figure it out. Then between his sophomore and junior year, he was starting to go to MAQ. He was starting to do things on his own. And again, those things, I'd be like, yeah, you can go. Like, but I would never take them to the same, like, hey, we're going up to St. Ed's, if they ever said, like, hey, Dad. But they really didn't. They would always get somebody else to work them out. And I was good with that. Like, it's all good. His junior year, he started at the beginning of the season simply because of an injury. But then this was the like halfway through, that kid came back. And I put PJ back on the bench, and literally come tournament time, he barely played. Like, and he probably deserved, like my coaches would say, like, Coach Flanagan, like, put him in.
Get him
like,
a little more time.
No,
yeah,
he's not ready.
Right.
He's not. So sometimes I held my kids back, I think, a little bit because of I didn't want to have that, you know, assumption like, hey, he's just throwing him in because he's his kid. So we ended up going to the Final Four in his junior year, but he didn't, you know, he got in the game like late, I think when we knew the game was over. So I threw him in with the rest of the guys, but he went from a starter to a kid that was a role player to a kid that really didn't play much his junior year, which is probably opposite of what a lot of parents, you know, fathers and sons relationships were with. So he had a tough junior year, but to my surprise, that motivated him even more. He was working out more. He was spending more time on it. He became a leader with our team. He really brought in, and he became literally our leading scorer and one of our best players as a senior, had an unbelievable senior year. I was so proud, you know, so proud of him, just the way he handled it, the way he dealt with it. And now he's playing at Carroll. So, again, his parents, my wife and I are, you know, we couldn't be more proud that we have two kids that are going to John Carroll just for the education, but let alone now they're going to play again together.
How fun is that going to be?
It's my wife's going to have a ball. I mean, it's going to be hard for me running back and forth. But I mean, it's fun, and I just hope it. I hope it continues. And again, I tell them too. Like, I went away to school to play. Back to the beginning of this podcast, 4 hours ago. I went away to play. I didn't like it and came home and started a different path. I get it. Like, if you guys don't want to do this, you know, Sean actually went to Gannon, Division II. So he got like a scholarship to play basketball. He was there for a month and a half, and he just said, Dad, this isn't for me. You know, and I went up there, watched the practice, you know, just, hey, I'm going to support you. Let me check it out a little bit, just see if you're missing something. Eventually he said, you know what, I just can't do it. So we made him, listen, you're going to talk to your coach right away. You're going to be honest with him, tell him what it is. And you're finishing this semester of school, and then you'll leave. You're not walking out on anybody today, you know. So you're going to finish out what you at least to a certain point. And it's been the best decision that he made, because he's happy. And you know, outside of basketball, I think he's going to have a basketball career at some. I'm trying to talk him out of it because I know what the business is about, because he's talking about college coaching and doing some of that stuff. But you know, Mike, now they're both gone. And it's like, you know, my advice, and I know people said this to me all the time, like, enjoy it. You know, don't, you know, take it for granted. And I don't think I did. I tried to really soak it up. I really tried to take every moment in. But even when you do that, it's like blink of an eye.
It disappears so fast.
I can't believe I have two kids in college, let alone I've been waiting my whole career to coach my sons. And how fast that went. And now all of a sudden it's over. And it's like, you know, I have a daughter that's at Joe's, so she's a junior, and I got another one that's in eighth grade that'll play. And it's the same. I have the same relationship with them about basketball, even though I've coached their AAU team. So I give them a little bit of my time with coaching them. So they're always like, Dad, you coach them. You know, so I had to do the AAU thing with them. But it's the same. Like, we don't, like, girls, I'm not talking basketball unless you want to talk basketball. And I think it's worked out well. But it has limited some of, like, I don't have that father-son relationship where, like, after a game, like, we go BS about it, or, you know, we don't put the film up on the screen. Like, you know, maybe I missed some things there. And there are some things I'm sure I would do different if I had to do it over again. But that's more because you had a second chance, and it's, you know what I mean? But I wouldn't change it for anything. It was an awesome experience. I credit them more than me for the experience, because I thought they were very mature about it. I don't know. I always thought I wasn't extremely hard on them, but I know I was harder on them than all their teammates. And that was just my point of, you know, I'm not going to spoil these guys, and they're going to be treated like everybody else. And my oldest one really bought into that. He was fine with it. The younger one was always like, Dad, you're killing me. Like, you know, why are you so hard on me? You know, that was PJ's response. Right. And it's like, hey, but it was never over the line. I never embarrassed them in front of other, you know, I would never do that, to them. And it was a great experience, but the most important thing, because I would talk to other coaches too and be like, hey, I'm coaching my kids. How did you do it? And the advice is, you know, I got different advice from everybody else, which was great. And the reality is, just be you. You know, just be what you think is the right thing to do. Your relationship with your son or your daughter might be different than mine. So I would never say, like, you're wrong. You know, I would never say, like, hey, don't, you know, do it the way you feel is the right way to do it. But try to enjoy it. Try not to make basketball the experience, you know, don't make it more important than everything else. And it goes so darn fast. It's just like, hey, you know, take it in. And I always said, like, I want my kids to love me when it's all over. And I want them to do what they want to do, not what I want them to do. So if we did our job right as parents, and you know, this is when you send them off to college. And somebody told me this once, like, if you know, you're going to be upset, and you're going to be, as we all are, like, emotional. But if you did your job and you did it, you know, the way you felt like they're prepared, then you should be happy. Like, they're moving on and they're prepared. So that's the way I look at it.
That's ultimately what your job was.
Like, hey, just prepare them for being men or women in society. And if they're ready and you did your job, you should be happy that they're leaving, because they're prepared to take that next step. And it's kind of the way I've looked at it. And whether we did a good job or not, I think we did okay, and they're doing well. So I'm very proud. And I can say, like, they always say, I don't compliment. Even my daughters say, like, you never say pot. Like, you're always like, I said, you know,
giving them things they can work out.
Yeah, you know, but it's like, you know, now that they're on college, they're both out of here, I can be a lot more, you know, complimentary of them. That will be on my daughters a little bit more for, you got to work on this, you got to do that once in a while. But it's a great experience, but just be you, you know.
And yeah, everything. I think that's a great time to end. Yeah. I think that's a great thing to end on, just circling back to, we started out with relationships with players, relationships with your coaches, and with the relationship with your family. I think that's a great way to wrap it up. Eric, I can't thank you enough for your time. Let people know how they can get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you for any reason.
Still listening.
Yeah, if you haven't fallen asleep.
No, first of all, Mike, I appreciate you coming in. I enjoy doing this, and it's just an honor to be on it. I really enjoy your podcast. But they can get a hold of me at Coach Flan on Twitter. That's the only social media that I do or know. You can email me anytime at eflannery@sehs.net for St. Edward High School. We do have our own podcast, Worthy of the Jersey, that we do as well, which I love doing, and that's the only, you know, I listen to yours and mine, so that's it, and that's Worthy of the Jersey. You can get that on iTunes or download it just like this one, but I appreciate it, and I had a great time doing it. You brought up a lot of old stories and memories, which is always good, and if there's anything I can do for coaches, that's one of the things we didn't get into, but one of the things I love doing is now that I'm experienced and older, I can sit down and talk hoops with any coach and love to, especially young new coaches that just want to sit down and watch a practice and talk about it. I would do that at any time.
Awesome. And I would agree with what Eric just said. If you haven't had a chance to listen to his Worthy of the Jersey podcast.
Oh, I didn't say listen to it. It's not very good.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing on the Hoop Heads podcast, you're going to like what you're hearing on the Worthy of the Jersey podcast. It's definitely worth a listen. So to everybody out there, thanks for sticking with us through a long podcast. We hope you found some value with Coach Flannery, and we'll catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoop Heads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.